You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
So, what are you guys going to do? You going to continue to be a bunch of soft, underperforming, tattooed millionaires?
They said all along, perfection is not possible. We just want to get the big decisions right.
What are we doing? What are we doing?
Green room getting hot.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
The right answer was a goal in Times Square so we could do butts up. But that was an easy one.
That's why he's here!
From New York, New York, this is Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental Tire.
Welcome to Extra Time Radio. I'm pretty sure those first two sniffs or moan thingies that you threw in there are going to get cut. But either way, we can keep that one. Bobby Warshaw, as usual, welcoming us into the show with Andrew Wiebe away. Matt Doyle's here, stuffed with pastrami, so he's going to be low key again.
I'm taking a nap
in his corner. And
Bobby,
I'm David
Goss. Do you still think that's what a New York accent sounds like?
I'm not going to lie. I saw Hello Dolly, and he sounds like a train conductor from Hello Dolly.
Exactly. You come to New York, you get on one of the buses.
Wait,
and
you come
that's
to where?
What they do.
You come to where?
To New York.
To New York.
New York.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not a New Yorker.
Okay.
And then the first thing you do is get on a Greyhound. What are you, like, from Iowa? Where do you get on a bus?
Listen, my mother really likes doing the sightseeing buses in any city she goes to, even though we've been to New York 97 times.
So I've traveled the world, by the way. Just get that out there. I'm worldly. I studied abroad. And that same company that runs the hop-on, hop-off thing is in every city in the world. Like, think about the control they have over culture, society, maybe media, banking, all those things.
Did you ever ponder doing a David M. Goss hummus tour bus?
Why did you throw banking in there?
Because I think they might be controlling society.
Are they lizard people?
I don't know. Or mole people, one of the two. Like, I've not considered that. I also hate the hop-on, hop-off bus purely because I'm a New Yorker, so I'm, like, required to. It just feels that way. This has been fun. Let's get on to a little bit of soccer. We're going to talk national team, more moves going on. We've got Luke Sassano coming up in the second segment to talk about FC Cincinnati, how they're building out their roster, what's to come. He made a couple big acquisitions on expansion draft day. We'll talk about the biggest one for him when we have him on. And we have a huge mailbag. You guys sent us some great topics. There isn't that much happening. This is our last technically live show. We've got holiday specials that are pre-recorded coming up for you over the next week and a half. So I wanted to give you guys a chance to have this show. So I think it's going to be really fun once we beat each other over the head once again with national team stuff. Or Bobby, are you hopeful? Because this is the first camp and roster in the Greg Berhalter era.
Well, don't forget the Doyle Warshaw specials that might pop up in their feed every now and then. When Matt gets bored, he gets an idea, he just calls me up. Weeby walked me through how to post episodes once. I still have that in my email.
Oh,
so,
my God.
Does that work, Matt?
Oh, my God. I think I was down for this on Monday, but I have I have rethought my stance on that, and I'm going to encourage you to lose my phone number and email address over the next 2 weeks, we'll say. I'll see you in Florida. How about that?
Dude, pastrami changes you, man.
Yeah.
You're a different man on pastrami.
I'm re-embracing who I am.
Are you a happy and hopeful USMNT fan right now?
Yeah, I think I am. As you said, the camp roster was announced, and it's the first one of the Berhalter era, and I'm pretty much all in on Greg Berhalter. He impressed us when he was here. I like his vision of how he wants the game to be played. And this camp, it has most of the names that I think we all wanted to see.
100%. Players from MLS.
Yeah.
So no one coming from a foreign league.
Yeah.
Alex Bono, Sean Johnson, Tyler Miller, and Zach Steffen in goal. Jeremy Obobese, Christian Ramirez, and Jesse Zardes up top. And then a number of young defenders, Reggie Cannon, Justin Glad, Nick Lima, Mark McKenzie, Austin Trusty, Walker Zimmerman, Keegan Rosenberry along that back line. Aaron Long gets called back in. And Pennsylvania's own Daniel Lovitz gets his first.
He's the biggest surprise.
National team call,
and he was to be fair, he was very good for Montreal this year. And like, it's a Ben Sweat type of call up. It's like, okay, you know what? You're a veteran. You've put in the hours at left back, which is always a position of need. Can you come into this roster and give us a good 30 minutes? If we need to throw you on the field against Guatemala in a game we have to win, Can you do that? That's what Daniel Lovitz is auditioning for. Because I think it's clear from this and from the way he played, Garza is the one who's going to, I think, get the bulk of the minutes at left back in this camp.
Midfielders, Kellen Acosta, Paul Arriola, Rookie of the Year, Corey Baird, Michael Bradley, Russell Knauss, who you had championed for, Marky Delgado, Sebastian Legette, Jordy Mihailovic, Christian Roldan, and Will Trapp. So a lot of young players. Michael Bradley, probably the one national team veteran.
Sardis, I mean, Michael Bradley has more caps than the rest of the roster combined.
Yeah. And then on the back line, the veterans are Aaron Long and Daniel Lovitz, who have no...
I think Garza has about 15 caps.
Fair, right. Yeah, that's true. Although injured a lot and in and out.
For sure.
So you're hopeful.
Yeah.
Bobby? Because you ignored that question the first time.
I'm none of the above. It's January camp. I mean, what is there to say about January camp? If you go back and look at the last 10 January camps before 2006, 2009, after 2010, you know, all these camps throughout the good and the bad periods of the national team, they're all pretty weird. You know, if you were to look at them, you would say, why was that guy there? That camp roster wasn't very good. There's not a ton to take out of the fact who goes into January camp. So I'm neither super impressed or downtrodden.
Most of these guys won't ever play a regular role with the U.S. national team. But what I do like about it, and so I'm going to push back on you here a little bit, Bobby, is that so many of these are young guys. And I think we all, you know, whatever limitations you see in Austin Trusty's game, you could imagine a scenario in which he becomes a national team caliber center back. Same with Mark McKenzie. Same with Justin Glad, who I know struggled down the stretch, but we've all seen him play really good at a high level. And then, you know, same thing with Jeremy Obobese. He wasn't great in MLS Cup, but he was really good in the playoffs. You know, and I'm not as high on Georgi Mihailovic, but he's a 19-year-old, 20-year-old, I guess now, central midfielder, attacking midfielder, if you want to think of him that way, who's a starter. So, like, all of the, like, I'm happy to see that. I'm happy to see Corey Baird as well, another youngish player. I think what makes me hopeful is that Berhalter is erring on that side of the ledger, because I think too often in the past our national team program has been slow to work promising young players into the mix.
Is there anything you see from the profile of player brought up, the style of what Greg Berhalter is looking for?
Well, if you haven't been paying attention to Berhalter, or you're new to MLS or new to Berhalter, the one thing that's important to remember is his defined system, his detail-oriented system. When you have a detail-oriented system, you have very specific roles for your players at all times. Well, the next part of that is that you have a specific, and I saw the word that Berhalter used was positional profile. The three of us might think a player is good in general soccer terms, but that doesn't matter to Greg Berhalter. I would say Red Bulls are the other team that do this. Because they have such a defined style, are you good or bad in that specific system, in that specific role? And that's what Greg Berhalter will be looking for. He'll be looking for players that can fit the very detail-oriented, defined roles he gives player in each position. And Daniel Lovitz and Nick Lima were the two players he pointed out. Somebody had asked him, why did they get called in? Well, because they fit the positional profile. Even though you might not rate them that highly, I actually will give my left and right backs three specific things to do over and over. And I'm making the number three up, but that's really what good coaches do. It's if you do these specific things, you will succeed. And he's looking for players that can do those and fit into his overall machine.
One of those things is pass the ball.
Right.
And you could tell that as much from who's not here as from who is here. And I think Tim Parker is the big one. I think Tim Parker, if he was in the right situation, if he was in the right system, would actually be a decent passer of the ball. Not great, but decent. But the Red Bulls don't ask him to do that. Vancouver certainly never asked him to do that. He's never showed it. Well, the guys who are now apparently ahead of him on the depth chart, which include Walker Zimmerman, Aaron Long, Mark McKenzie, who's a very good passer of the ball, Justin Glad, they're all guys who can break lines with their passing and who have shown the ability to do that. So that's one. And then the other way is looking at the goalkeepers. You know, Alex Bono is getting another chance here. He was terrible in 2018, but he could play with his feet. Sean Johnson, solid keeper, plays with his feet a lot. Tyler Miller had, you know, first year as a starter, had some ups, had some downs, plays
young
with
goalkeeper,
his young too. Goalkeeper, plays with his feet. Bill Hamid is not here. Bill Hamid cannot play the ball with his feet. Tim Melia, I think, should be here. Stefan Fry, I think, should be here. neither of those guys are great with the ball at their feet. And same for Brad Guzan as well. That doesn't mean none of those guys are ever going to figure. I certainly hope Melia gets a look. But Greg Berhalter very clearly has a type, and he's letting you know what that type is with this camp.
Let me ask you this. Kevin Chan, can Russell Knauss play in Berhalter's holding number six? Can he distribute the ball? Kevin says, I admit not having seen him a whole ton, just holding out hope he beats out Trapp for that starting job.
That's the first or second biggest question, individual-based question from this camp. Can Knauss do the same sort of field generalship that Trapp has provided for the crew? And then I think whoever plays as the six is going to have to provide for Berhalter. And if he can, it raises the entire team ceiling, because Will Trapp's a good soccer player, but we've seen it time and again against international caliber athletes. He can't hold his own defensively. Just in individual situations, he can't hold his own defensively, and there's no amount of structure and system that can make up for that. Russell Knauss can. So if he's able to raise just the physical level of the team defensively while still bringing that tempo-setting, field-spreading sort of idea of what a six is to the U.S. national team, that's a huge win for this camp.
I'd be really surprised if Will Trapp didn't improve his performances greatly under Greg Berhalter, because he's going to have specific duties at all times. He's the kind of player you can't just throw out on the field and say, go do your thing. He needs a job. To go back to Russell Knauss taking that spot, when you hear about Greg Berhalter, when you hear him speak about soccer, he uses the same line over and over, disorganizing the opponent. Well, part of that is once you do disorganize the opponent, you have to hit the openings. And the way you hit the openings through Berhalter's system is often these long diagonals. And we know it's like Will Trapp's signature pass. It's one of the signature passes in Major League Soccer. Get it off one side, Will Trapp gets it on his front foot, opens his hips, drives it to the attacking fullback on the far side. And that's a key part to what Greg Berhalter does. And there's a question about whether Russell Knauss can do that. We don't know if he can't do it. It's just not something he did with DC United. So that'll be a big part of it. Can he get his body shape right? Can he have the field awareness to know when to do it? And then does he have the technique to drive that ball consistently over and over?
This is January camp, so nothing's going to be decided here. Bobby, give me one thing, though, you want to see, whether it's in the friendlies or just what you're hearing from camp. One thing that will make you happy, or one thing you'd look for at the end of this whole run for the U.S. national team?
Well, the three big ones to go to the checklist, if Greg Garza can have two good games at the end of the camp at left back, I think that would all make us feel really good and really relieved, the fact that we have a steady left back now. Two is the Russell Knauss. And three, I'm really looking forward to seeing how Sebastian Legette does, because I suspect he'll be a midfielder. And to do another Columbus Crew comparison, Legette feels the most ready to take that Arthur role as the second double pivot dash box to box player. And I think the world of Sebastian Legette. Kellen Acosta and Sebastian Legette are the two that I think there's still another level we haven't seen. And I've been waiting for Kellen to get there for 3 years, but Legette has been the one that's towed up there a little more often.
This camp's going to end with two games. The first, January 27th at State Farm Stadium in Glendale, Arizona. That one's 8 p.m. Eastern time on ESPN2 and Univision. And then a week later, they'll face off against Costa Rica at Avaya Stadium in San Jose on February 2nd. That one on Fox and Univision at 3:30 p.m. Eastern time. January camp, it means, you know, the turning of a page. It also means that we are starting to look already to the 2019 Major League Soccer season. MLS announced the home openers for every team here on Thursday. It starts Saturday, March 2nd, Philadelphia Union versus Toronto FC in Philly at 1 p.m. Eastern time will be the first game of the 2019 MLS season. That first Sunday, the two big games is DC United hosting Atlanta United at Audi Field and LAFC hosting Sporting KC at Bank of California Stadium. Some other big ones to look at: the Portland Timbers will kick off on the road against the Colorado Rapids, trying to get back to another MLS Cup, and FC Cincinnati will make their debut in Major League Soccer. Where else but at the Seattle Sounders, 10 p.m. that night. If you remember, LAFC made their debut in Major League Soccer last year at Seattle, so clearly there's a nice welcoming party. Seattle has something going on where they're able to get this game every single time. Unfortunately, they lost it last year, so maybe it's not a good thing. I don't know if that had any way affected it. next week, another set of home openers. So go to MLSsoccer.com to check those out, and you can start looking at tickets and start getting ready to see when you're going to see your team for the first time and what tickets you want. I will point this out. The latest home opener, June 1st. Portland Timbers, of course, are doing construction on Providence Park, so their home opener will not be until June. That one against LAFC as they try and go the bulk of the beginning of the season on the road. Minnesota United will open up Alianza Field on April 13th. That one against NYCFC, another one of the new stadiums coming online next year. It's going to be a lot of fun. One team that we do not know who will have a coach at that point is the LA Galaxy. We talked about this on Monday. I think it's gotten more chaotic since Monday. There are rumors everywhere from everyone. I made the Jose Mourinho joke, I think, here on Monday, or had not been fired yet.
I don't think he'd been fired yet.
Okay, so I'm making the Jose Mourinho joke here on Thursday on the show that he's going to coach the LA Galaxy, Pepe at center back. We've heard rumors now that Miguel Herrera from Club America, which we had sort of mentioned on Monday but hadn't heard heavily. Guillermo Barros Colotta still in the conversation. Caleb Porter still does not have a job.
We have to, well, we have to plug our friend Sam's work. He put a
don't assume. Just he's someone we work with. I don't. Yeah. Don't assume he's my friend.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. Our colleague Sam Stashel's
someone
work,
that I know.
He reported yesterday on MLSsoccer.com that the Galaxy had offered a 1-year contract to Dom Kinnear, and Dom Kinnear turned it down because it's a 1-year contract. Then they offered 3 to Caleb Porter, and that looked like it was going well. And then Columbus came in over the top of that Galaxy offer, and I think offered Porter $1 million a year for 5 years, which is huge money. And that it's not officially done yet because
God, Doyle, don't fawn over $5 million. You look embarrassed.
Yeah, right. That's not done yet because obviously there are some wheels still turning in terms of who actually owns the crew.
Right.
But it looks like that will happen. And that leaves the Galaxy, I mean, kind of back at square one. Do they go back to Kinnear? Do they go to Guillermo Barros Schelotto, who, according to reports on two continents, does want to coach in MLS, but it seems like Atlanta United aren't all that into him.
He's just getting that 3 dots every time he texts ATL UTD.
Right?
Just getting those 3 dots, no response.
Yeah. No, it's weird. And if you look at the other variables, again, Miguel Herrera, Piojo, the head coach of Club America, who just won their 13th Liga MX title. Caleb Porter is a fine coach. He doesn't have Piojo's track record. That said, if you have that kind of cash, Guillermo Barros Schelotto is out of a job. And he won, what, 4 trophies in 3 years with Boca Juniors? Like, granted, he's not the greatest coach in the world, I don't think. But he's really good. And he knows MLS. Like, get this done. Get this done.
Are you worried for Atlanta in any way?
A little bit.
They don't. It sounds like PT's coming in. So they don't have to do a ton of roster building.
Uh-huh.
But they do need a coach at some point.
At some point. I mean, I've joked about the Alan Pardew thing, but
stop,
I've heard I've heard from more than one credible person that there is a non-zero chance that they're really considering him for the job. It seems crazy to me. You would think Schelotto would be the ideal choice, and given their, but maybe again there are rumors that he and PT Martinez don't get along, so maybe that's you just have to toss that out. Either way, it feels like given the personality they've built into this team, they probably need to look for a coach from Latin America. And maybe as things sort of came apart, they had to go back to square one. But this is all maybe. I don't know.
It's going to be interesting to see.
Bobby's just throwing his hands up. Great job this segment, Bobby.
I don't like talking about this stuff. We've talked about this stuff 9 times on this show now.
So
it's definitely not something a diva would say. That's really good teamwork. Appreciate that.
Good stadium news coming out of Columbus, Ohio.
Bobby is the Zlatan of this show.
As well as Austin. Groundbreaking in Cincinnati. We'll talk to Luke Sassano about that. So a lot of stadium news going on. Make sure to stick to MLSsoccer.com for all of that. A reentry draft, which we all love. Matt Lamson headed to the LA Galaxy, who started David Bingham last year. And then Tommy McNamara headed to the Houston Dynamo. So CONCACAF is about to get Tommy Mack.
The man who drafted him originally with the Goats, Wilmer Cabrera.
That's so true.
Yeah, it's kind of a – I mean, Wilmer got – a lot out of Tommy Mack, I think.
And he got the mullet. He might get the mullet back.
This is actually a really smart pickup for Houston, because I think he could back – they play that 4-2-3-1. He could back up any of those three positions on the three line. He's cheap. He knows the league. He works. Like, it's a good pickup.
Sorry, let me just say it this way. He's an upgrade over Arturo Alvarez in 2019.
I would
respect
agree
with that. To Arturo, but
yeah,
it's been
agree.
A little while.
I would agree with that.
At that point. A trade going down in Major League Soccer a couple days ago. Kellen Rowe went from the New England Revolution to the Colorado Rapids for Edgar Castillo. He then went from the Colorado Rapids to Sporting KC for Diego Rubio and $300,000. So right after we did our segment of Eric Hurtado's here and the whole team is locked in at the front line for Sporting KC, they traded one of those three forwards. Now they have an opening. They also have Kellen Rowe. Let's start with this. Which of the three teams do you think did the best in this trade?
Matt, you have a strong opinion on this, so...
I think Sporting Kansas City got $100,000 a TAM, $200,000 a GAM, and the best player in the deal. It opens up a spot for a DP number nine. And by the way, they just signed two international caliber fullbacks center backs over the last 6 months. And Icopara wants a raise, and he's not going to get it in Kansas City. But now Icopara is maybe the best trade chip in the league. So it all adds up to where it looks like Sporting Kansas City are going to be able to go out on the market and trade Icopara and whatever allocation money they have accrued this offseason for a goal-scoring number nine, which is what they've needed since Dom Dwyer.
I want to respond. Matt mentioned that the Sporting Kansas City got the best player in the trade, Kellen Rowe. I want to twist that a little bit to a different line of thinking. Kansas City got the player they need the least in the trade, where the New England Revolution had to get a left back. And I actually think that Edgar Castillo, based on the ability compared to other people in your position, your opportunity cost in that position, that Edgar Castillo might actually be the absolute best player on that perspective. He might have been one of the top five left backs in MLS last year. I have a story coming on this. He was in my top five left backs in MLS last year.
Yeah. But, I mean, he played for the Rapids, so he has to be in your top five of every list.
True. Jack Price did make top five of three different lists.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you're right. I'm a big Kellen Rowe fan, and in terms of ability, he might be the best. But it sounds like Diego Rubio is going to start for Colorado.
With Kai Kamara.
With Kai Kamara in a 4-4-2 diamond. And we all think that Diego Rubio has a 15 to 20 goal season in him, no?
I guess. I don't know. Like, over 3 years... he only played 2,100 minutes for a team that desperately needed a goal scorer.
Oh, well, the question I always ask myself, if Diego Rubio played for Bob Bradley, how many goals does Diego Rubio score in LAFC right now?
I don't know. I don't know if he gets on the field for Bob Bradley.
Okay, but take the other strikers away. Diego Rubio is number one. Does he not get 10 to 15 goals as Bob Bradley's center striker?
Probably.
There you go. If he's in the right system with the right coach.
Yeah, but there's a difference between Bob Bradley's center striker and... Anthony Hudson.
Okay, but that's different. In terms of building a roster and player personnel, Diego Rubio to the Rapids and that 4-4-2 diamond makes a ton of sense. And then Castillo to left back for the Revs, who, you're right, probably gave up more than they needed to, although we don't know who actually paid Edgar Castillo's buyout for Monterrey, do we? Has that come out?
No, it hasn't.
No.
Okay, so assuming that Colorado paid the buyout and then got the rights and then New England got it and only gave up a player... and that's a pretty good deal for New England, even though New England doesn't do a ton of those, as we often talk about. So, anyway, I want to point out that I'm with Matt that Kansas City probably got the best of this, but this just feels like a trade where everyone won.
Yeah, agreed.
And more so importantly from the player's perspective, all three players got to places where they are higher valued, they are more highly valued than they were previously, which just feels good to see that happen to players.
And it's possible in Major League Soccer because you have a lot of teams can be good, a lot of teams can improve because you got a world to pull from rather than the NFL or NBA where there's like 13 players that are good and worthwhile. The Revs made another move this week. Juan Fernando Caicedo, we talked a little bit about it in Monday's show, 29 years old, 89 goals in 300 appearances coming from Colombia. Brian Bolello tweeted they're working on 3 to 4 deals. max money was what he said, and maybe one DP. So the Revs hoping to have a bunch of movement here at the close of 2018. Nashville MLS signed their first ever player. Cameron Lancaster, record goal
scorer. Second player.
Who's their first?
A young Mexican kid who's been playing for
Orange County, I believe.
Or maybe North Carolina.
Okay. Wait, what?
Yeah. You didn't know about this?
Curveball?
Yeah. Now I have to look it up.
Yeah.
What are they? Nashville SC? Yeah.
No, Nashville SC is the USL team that Cameron Lancaster is going to be loaned to. Mm-hmm. Nashville MLS is the MLS team.
Yeah. That signed. Daniel Rios.
Well, that ruined
my
whole thing.
Daniel Rios is a former Mexican U-20. He was on the books at Chivas Guadalajara for 4 years and was a youth player with them. He's been loaned out to Coras, which is a team I don't even know, Zacatepec, which would be second division in Mexico, and then 2018 to North Carolina FC, scored 20 goals in 31 games.
Wow. Doyle really ruined my whole thing.
Yeah, nice
work. I was going to do a whole history and expansion teams and blah, blah, blah. All right, well, that happened. Now I'm going to move on.
They have two forwards now.
And then the last piece of news, it sounds like Atlanta United won't host their CCL game at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. It'll be hosted at a different location, so no 73,000 fans to come welcome in Alajuelense, right? You guys are all dead on
Does Bobby Dodd not hold 70,000?
No, it holds like
it's 42. It's not Bobby Dodd.
But they're not going to Bobby Dodd either, but I was just...
It only held 42. That's what they...
48.
That's what they expanded to. I think it holds more than that, but they didn't put more people in that.
I don't know why I mentioned Bobby Dodd when it's not even going to be played there. It's going to be played at the third place, which is...
I don't know, man. It's out in the burbs. I think it's out in Marietta. And I think it holds like 10 or 15,000, something like that.
Monster truck? Is that what it is?
I think
at Mercedes-Benz?
Yeah. Exciting times in Major League Soccer based off what I just said. We're going to talk to Luke Sassano when we come back from FC Cincinnati, and then we've got your massive mailbag coming up at the end of the show.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime@mlssoccer.com or tweet at Extra Time Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Hey, Miss Serious, we don't have to act so serious. Be like nobody's watching, only us, baby.
Welcome back to Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental and MLSsoccer.com. The last live show of the year, and who better to close out 2018 but one of the men that's going to be in charge of one of the big storylines of 2019, Luke Sassano, Technical Director of FC Cincinnati. Luke, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me on.
So I teased this at the top of the show, but expansion draft was a big day for you. You got to build out your MLS roster, but you made a larger acquisition than just a couple soccer players. You added one to the Sassano clan.
Yeah, it was quite an interesting 72 hours, to say the least. So my wife was joking that I couldn't be in two places at once. So we're trying to figure out how to Skype in and all that jazz. But obviously, we're definitely excited to welcome our daughter to the world. And I've been prepared for the sleep deprivation, because in this industry, you don't sleep anyways. So that's what I've told my wife, is that I'm at least prepared for that. So it was definitely an exciting week for our club with Jeff and Alan, and obviously Hunter heading up there. And, you know, it was a time where we got to, you know, select five guys and five pieces of business. Maybe some guys will be with us, obviously, for next year. And some, as you saw with Kai, we used as a piece of business to get another player in Kendall. So we're definitely excited with the guys that will be joining us. And again, it was another piece of history in the club. And, you know, after that, we obviously announced the signing of Greg and a couple other guys, Windfall, this week. So it's been a busy offseason, I think, in the past 3 or 4 weeks, to say the least.
I got to ask, did you name your daughter with the first pick FC Cincinnati takes, or I need more Gam and Tam?
I don't know how that would have gone over too well at home, so... I left it pretty simple. So Ava Luciana is her name, but we're definitely excited.
If anyone ever asks you in the future what date was the expansion draft, you'll at least remember that one. It makes it pretty easy. It's like getting married on New Year's Eve.
It does make it very easy. Actually, we had to go. Unfortunately, we were in the hospital for a little bit longer than we'd like. And when I was checking in, they asked me the patient's name, and I started giving my information. So I'm still getting used to having a child, but definitely excited. It's a wonderful thing for sure.
So you mentioned Jeff Birding, president of the team, Alan Koch, the coach, Hunter Freeman, who was helping you out here for expansion draft. What's been the workflow, the breakdown between all of you? Because we've heard stories about Alan Koch out scouting and meeting with players and Jeff as well. What's the breakdown been like at the head of this club?
Yeah, definitely. Obviously, you have Jeff, you know, at the top of the pyramid, you know, who represents ownership. So reports to our ownership group, leading with Carl Linder. And down on the technical side, you obviously have a lot of us moving pieces working together. And I think the number one thing is to maximize resources. So over the past probably 7 months, you know, closing out the USL season, obviously Alan's time was pretty focused on making sure that we did all the right things to close out the season in the right way. But behind the scenes, we were doing a lot of building. And I think as you're building a team, you're not just building a team on the field, but you're also building infrastructure. And that's a short term, but that's also a long term vision. So besides just on the field acquisitions and the players, we're also building a scouting department. We're building an analytics department. We're building all these different silos and departments to make our player recruitment process, but also the infrastructure in the club as we kind of take the next step in our evolution with the academy and reserve team and all these things in the future down the line, that we've laid a really, really solid foundation for player acquisition and recruitment. So it's been quite a busy 7 months, but all this is a very collective decision-making process. I think when you have different perspectives and you know, people with different ideas and different visions of what a player looks like, or what should a contract look like, or what is the value of a player, it only helps in the process. And obviously with Jeff being the final decision maker in the process, you know, Alan and myself and the scouting and coaching staff were able to come up with ideas and solutions and present them collectively together and make sure that as we're going through the process, we're not only thinking about the best interests of the team, but we're also thinking about the best interests of the partnerships on the field. And that's, I think, what we've clued in to be a big key of hopefully being successful is finding the right partnerships, finding in certain positions how guys work together and how to maximize efficiently the best out of each guy that we have on the field. So I think with us not having the biggest budget in the league and coming in new with our ownership group investing in, you know, Mercy Health Center, and us having that brand new training center, it's an exciting time, but it's also big investments as well. So we also want to be very fiscally responsible as we're making decisions, but putting our team in the best opportunity to win, because at the end of the day, that's what we feel it's about. You know, we're a winning brand and we want to continue to be a winning brand. We know going into the league, there's going to be our challenges, there's going to be the ups and downs, but I think having a plan and being sticking to it and being patient about it can only lead to good things in the future.
Luke, if you check Twitter, but if you go on Twitter, there's always going to be some mm-hmm. criticisms of decisions made. Is it all right if I put you on the spot and just ask you to answer a couple of those questions directly?
Absolutely. Go ahead.
So one of them was taking Darren Maddux first in the expansion draft. You know, a high-risk, high-reward player. Can you walk fans through the thought process on that one?
Yeah, well, I think the thought process was to – and let me take a step back with Darren, because that was a club decision as well. That was a collective decision. And I think taking a step back is when you see the available players. At first, there's a big excitement, a big interest. And as you start to break down everybody's unique situation – and I think regardless of that fact, we saw Darren as a player that, you know, did well last year, scoring 10 goals and maybe not as much time as anticipated. Obviously, has had a bit of a up and down career, so to speak, but still a pretty good age. And I think, number one, Alan felt comfortable with him with his previous experience. And I think finding a striker, and especially an American striker, that can either start games for you or work alongside with a partnership with Audi or come off the bench, however it may work, I think is something that is very advantageous as you build a roster. And I think with that specifically, as we're starting to engineer, whether it's the first pick or the fifth pick, we're excited to have Darren with us. I think he's a guy that, you know, doing our background researches from coaches to players, everybody has enjoyed working with him. And I think when you hear that type of conversation internally and you hear it from players that have played with a player, and maybe his movements or the way he plays goes a little bit more unnoticed from people watching the game. I think we've got to take that into consideration. And it goes back to partnerships, I think, from the beginning, is having the philosophy from Allen on the field and how do those players work together. And I think Darren was a unique and a very interesting opportunity for us. And I think that's probably the best way to explain it, specifically with Darren. But listen, there's going to be criticism of when you're winning. There's going to be criticism when you're losing, probably more when you're losing. But that's just the nature of the beast. And I think it's for us is to, again, maximize, as you mentioned, Bobby, high risk, high reward. You obviously need to find players that fit a certain profile in that regard, but also finding guys that can give you a different element. And I think with Darren, from his speed to his knack for scoring certain goals to playing in certain systems, it's something we're looking forward to seeing in preseason with the group next year.
I appreciate you answering that. And just for listeners who aren't familiar, that relationship you're talking about with Alan Koch and Darren Maddox comes from their time together at the Whitecaps when Koch was an assistant coach and Maddox was a player. My next similar question is about your midfield. And I'm a huge, I love Eric Alexander, Victor Ulloa, and Fatai Alashe, all as individual players, but they seem similar to me. They seem like they all fulfill a similar role, and you have three players to do the same thing.
I think when you look at on the surface, they all have certain characteristics that you may classify in certain similar profiles. But when I think you dig underneath a little bit and you look at their background, you know, you look at Fatai, 24, going to be 25 years old. Eric is a little bit older with a little bit more experience, just came off of winning an Open Cup. You look at Leonardo Bertone, who we just bought in, 24, 25 years old, who has experience in Europe. And being a what we wanted to engineer with this team that we're building are guys that have had experience winning and guys that have had experience playing in certain environments where they had to battle. And I think you look at guys like Loa in Dallas, who – Victor's done very well there. He's been part of a Supporters Shield winner. He brings a different element, I think, than maybe Fatai and Eric bring. I think Fatai is a player that on the ball has very good movements, has a good, very good passing range. I think Victor is probably understated in terms of his ability to break up the ball, and he's very good tactically, positionally. And I think Eric brings in a even other unique element, even though they have very similar qualities, is that he's able to move with the ball in between the lines. And what I mean by that is that whether he's playing in a 4-3-3 or 4-2-3-1 or 4-4-2, he really offers a flexibility and a comfort on the ball and a dependability. And I think as you're building a team, you need guys that have had experience in different environments, but have all know what it takes to get the job done. And I think that transitions to, again, the partnerships. Now, these guys can maybe they're all three going to play together. Maybe only two of them are going to play at the same time. Maybe there's going to be another piece we're bringing into this puzzle. But what I'll say is, and I'll leave that obviously up to Alan. But I think, Bobby, what you just said is a great point. I mean, you look and some of these guys have certain characteristics that fit, I think, the style of play that Alan wants to play. And then we'll be able to utilize these guys in positions that, you know, then it's our job to make sure that they're successful on the field.
You brought up Bertone, a big signing. He's played Champions League, entering his prime, a player you don't maybe always see come to Major League Soccer from Europe at that age with that profile. What was the process there? What can he bring? What's the level of excitement?
Yeah, it's been a great process with Leo. You know, I first went over to see him and meet him in person a couple months ago. And I think, number one, he is an extremely high character guy, especially a guy for his age. He's been with Young Boys since he was very young, extremely loyal person. And he's been with them through the highs when they've obviously played in the Champions League and won championships at Young Boys. And he's gotten that experience at what we call in the U.S. a young age. But he's been a professional for about 7 years. So when we look at that, for a player of his quality and for the position we were really seeking and how Alan wants to play, I think he checked a lot of boxes. And I'll go back to, the next part is finding guys with that really high character, guys that want to be in Cincinnati, players that want to take on a challenge of coming to the MLS. At some point, the recruitment has to stop. And the player then has to sell themselves. And I think that's the fine balance that we're trying to find in the international marketplace and even in the domestic marketplace, when you want people to be a part of the project. And we're a club that is growing and building. And I think in what I mentioned earlier on, we're going to have hiccups. We're going to have challenges, times where we're going to need to pivot, tough decisions we're going to need to make. But it's important to establish that culture and bring in players that know what adversity is like and know how to handle it. And I think with Leo, talking about his on-the-field qualities, he's a player that is very technical, very good on the ball, has a great engine, enjoys getting into the box, very good finisher when he has the ball, good on free kicks. But he's also a leader, and he's a guy that people gravitate to, you know, speaking four languages, being a guy that has had experience bringing around older players and still being a leader in the group. So he checks a lot of boxes for us in terms of the profile we are looking for. But I think also he's going to bring a competitive bite to the midfield and to the team. And again, it's all going to be competition as well. And I think Leo is excited to come to a new environment. And, you know, that's going to take it could take a certain period of time to adjust, like many players, but it could be also hit the great gate running. And, you know, he's a guy that very thorough in his research, whether it's from Cincinnati or MLS. He played with Joseph Martinez at Young Boys. So he was already been quizzing people in the league. Scott Sutter, who was at Orlando City. So he's done his research, not just on us as a club, but also on the league, and knowing that, you know, travel is going to be different. Wanting to make sure that he has an apartment before he gets here for preseason. So when you see those little things that are the off the field, you hope that it will translate to a quicker assimilation process into the field.
How close to complete is this roster, is this team? How close to what we're going to see, and we'll talk about it in a second, on March 2nd, is this team?
Yeah, we're getting close. I think we have a couple pieces. You know, we're very happy with the team we have right now, but obviously I think we're a couple pieces away from really putting us into a good place to be very balanced on both sides of the ball. But I think some things will be said hopefully here in the next couple of weeks that I'm alluding to. But we also want to make sure that we're prepared in terms of our cap flexibility going into the summer. We know historically that, you know, being an expansion team, we have a certain set of challenges, but also being an MLS team, there's another unique set of challenges, which is investment timing and player acquisition timing. You know, you want to come out of the gates in a good place, but it's not how you start, it's how you finish. And we want to make sure that we're very cognizant of that, that we want to build a team that is prepared and can come out playing very exciting soccer, but also be a team that is winning games. And I think that's a big challenge. And as you'll jump into the schedule as well, we want to make sure that we have a team that has roster flexibility going into the summer, but also a team that has a balance on both sides of the ball as we start the season.
So we've got the dates now. March 2nd at Seattle will be the first ever MLS game in FC Cincinnati history. You then go to Atlanta in the next game, and then you finally come home March 17th at Nippert Stadium, hosting the Portland Timbers for the first ever home game in MLS history for FC Cincinnati. Did getting the schedule today feel differently? Does it feel more real? Is it making you nervous that date's coming up kind of soon?
No, honestly, no nerves at all. It's just excitement. I mean, we've been preparing for so long. The exciting part is seeing how the pieces fall in place. Preseason, getting guys on the field, you know, being in the environment, seeing how all the work from our backroom staff, and not just on the technical side, but the backroom staff on our ticket sales, marketing, sponsorships, and especially for our fan base. I mean, people have been so excited to get through the USL season and just waiting for this moment in MLS. So it's only excitement on our end. And I think when the schedule came out, we're just excited because, to be honest, you're going to have to play every team in the league. It doesn't matter when you play them. So that's not something we're really zoning in on. We need to make sure that we're prepared as a team and we're going through the right things in preseason to make sure that when March 2nd rolls around, that when we're in Seattle, that we're prepared to show up for the game.
Murderers Row to start, though. 2016 MLS Cup winners, 2018 MLS Cup winners, and 2018 MLS Cup final losers to start that out. So no favors for your side. What do you think that first game at Nippert on March 17th is going to be like?
It's going to be intense. I mean, the the atmosphere here in the city right now, from seeing FC Cincinnati, you know, shirts, hats, because it's a little bit cold right now, but seeing people walk around and just talking about the game is something exciting in terms of talking about not just, you know, our home opener, but talking about the game of soccer. And that is something that has really been pretty interesting and quite frankly, pretty cool to see in a city like Cincinnati that has really embraced not just our club, but embraced the sport wholeheartedly. It's fantastic to be a part of it. And it's going to be bumping. I mean, that day is going to be exciting, not just that day, but obviously leading up to the home opener is going to be really exciting. And we're looking forward to it.
Luke, thanks so much for taking the time. We know you're busy, so we appreciate you joining us here today. Have a good off-season holiday time. Your first preseason and then soon to be your first Major League Soccer season. It's going to be fun.
All right, guys. Thanks. I appreciate it.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime@mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratimeradio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Last segment of 2018, guys.
I think Bobby's last segment was on Monday.
Because I'm here. I'm energized. You just talked about something I don't care about anymore.
So what
we've talked about it 19 times in the last 2 weeks.
What
there's
would
no
have,
news.
What would you have preferred to talk about?
I would like to hear you talk about how Michael Jordan actually isn't any better than Harrison Barnes.
Oh my God! Why would you say that? How can you go? How can you disrespect MJ like that? Bobby,
you are unbelievable.
In fairness, Doyle used to be a Warriors fan, so Harrison Barnes was on MJ's level for 4 years before he took the money and went to Dallas to play with the real MJ, Luka Doncic. Let's get into the mailbag. You guys sent us some incredible stuff. First one here from Perry in Portland. That's convenient. I binge-watched all of Sunderland Till I Die the other day and loved it.
Oh, I binge-watched Sabrina the Teenage Witch.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
I didn't
really
watch the whole thing,
it.
But
yeah.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, it's
then got to thinking what teams or teams from MLS this past year would make for
Not
a good...
the Teenage Witch, the new one.
Yeah,
Chilling
yeah.
Adventures of Sabrina.
Yeah. I understand.
Yeah.
And would make for a good year-long documentary. I would go with, in no particular order, Orlando, LA Galaxy, NYCFC, LAFC, and maybe Toronto.
Whew.
LA, so, it's got to be the Galaxy, number one, but then Orlando, too. That's a good shout.
So you don't want the teams that win titles. You want chaos and infighting and lack of success and coaching moves.
Well, sometimes the simplest answer is the right answer. In this case, that's Zlatan.
Yeah.
No, like, just follow Zlatan, follow whatever's going on with the Galaxy.
If you had to pick now, your production team to set up for 2019, who would it be? Oh, it's still Zlatan.
As a soccer nerd, I would love to see LAFC and Bob Bradley. That's my own personal preference, but I acknowledge the masses would prefer Zlatan in the Galaxy.
I think if we eliminate Zlatan in the Galaxy because it's so obviously the right answer, I think Toronto would be interesting. The last year of Jovinko Bradley and Altidore, and I think it is going to be their last year with that team, to see how the personalities work or don't together in that entire locker room to see if there really is enough left in the tank emotionally to bounce back from the awful 2018 they have and actually compete for titles like they did in 2016 and 17. That's a good one. The other one is, and it's kind of like the Zlatan effect, but I mean, wouldn't you watch a 2018 documentary on DC United?
I knew you were going to say that, and I was about to be like, no, it's not the Zlatan effect. Wayne Rooney?
I mean, to see, like, from everything I've heard, like, that, he brought that locker room together. He, like, and he's Wayne Rooney, right? He is one of the 15, 20 best players of the last 15 years. And maybe that's even underselling him a little bit.
Definitely not underselling him.
And he was, like, a glue guy.
If he played 30 years ago, he would be Harrison Barnes.
Wow. That's a take. I would love to see that. I would love to. And then, like Bobby said, Orlando City, the you know, to watch a team implode like that over the course of months and months would be fascinating.
Someone may have already asked this. They haven't. If we were to join the league, which MLS team would you wish Jose Mourinho on? As a Quakes fan, I'd have to say the Galaxy. I'll admit he would bring some serious entertainment value, at least a bit in Shida Freya, for fans whose teams he thankfully avoids, Dan in California. Take away the Galaxy. Where would you put Jose Mourinho in Major League Soccer? Not including who already, like, forget anyone has a coach. For city, for roster, for interacting with their ownership or their fans, where would you put him?
The Revs.
Why the Revs?
Drama, man.
Yeah.
Would there even be drama there? I think the Revs are the type of franchise that would just become Jose's.
Jose got mad at Ed Woodward.
Yeah.
And the $150 million investments he was making. What would he do when his best choice was Wilfred Zahiba?
That's fair.
Hey, excuse me, Robert and Jonathan?
Yeah, I can't coach if I don't have at least Arturo Vidal and Casemiro on central midfield.
Do we, seriously though, do we think there's any chance Jose Mourinho is a MLS coach in the immediate future?
What do you mean, in the next 4 years?
No, the immediate future, in the next month. Do the Galaxy go after him? It would make a splash. They would become the bigger team in LA.
Both Mourinho and Wenger. I would say there's a non-zero chance.
I'd say more Mourinho than Wenger. I think there's a better chance that Mourinho comes.
Really?
Well, where else can he get? Well, that gets into a European soccer conversation, which we don't have to do. Yeah. But he has burned many bridges. He has already done most of the jobs I think he's interested or passionate about at a club level.
The one big league he hasn't managed in yet is Germany. And there's only one team in Germany that has the transfer budget necessary to satisfy Mourinho.
And they're not hiring.
They're not hiring Jose Mourinho. The thing that I would look for in Europe for him would be one of the Russian teams.
Like get paid a bunch of money.
Yeah.
And pull a Fabio Capello.
Yes,
thing.
Exactly.
Gus Hinnink. On the subject of what is a successful season, the debate you're having has a perfect example.
I got to ask you, though, would you want Mourinho in MLS for the Galaxy?
He's willing to come for the same price that you offered Caleb Porter. He takes Caleb Porter's contract offer right now. If you're the Galaxy, do you sign
it? It makes our job so much easier.
Yeah, who are you asking? Are you asking me as like a soccer fan, a fan who wants the best teams in Major League Soccer?
If you're Chris Klein.
Oh, if I was Chris Klein, no, I would not want him.
So if I was Chris Klein, I absolutely would. Because if you sign Jose Mourinho, you hit all your business metrics.
Yeah, 100%. But not from a soccer point
of view. The
next
2 years in 2 weeks.
Sorry, if I was Dennis DeClose, I would not want him.
Correct.
If I was Chris Klein, I would agree with that 100%.
And if there was a legitimate chance to sign Mourinho and Chris Klein is thinking about doing it and DeClose comes in and says, no, we can't hire him, he's not right. If I'm Chris Klein, I laugh DeClose out of the office.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. Let's move on. We had a debate about successful seasons. We talked about Luchi Gonzalez and what 2019 can look like and should look like for FC Dallas. So Brian from Delaware here, the debate you're having has a perfect example, the 2018 Philadelphia Union. It's the difference between national viewpoint and local viewpoints. Most Union fans see another cup final loss and barely making the playoffs only to get outplayed by a better team again, while you guys see the development of two very young center backs that could have national team futures. Success is all a matter of your viewpoint, and personally, the team I watch for 34 league games every year means more to me than a national team that only plays meaningful games a couple of times a year.
That's fair. Maybe I just view sports differently, but here's the thing about sports. Everyone's miserable except two teams in every league, right? The feelings we feel from sports are so much more negative than they are positive.
No, the best feeling in sports isn't when your team wins a title. It's the first year they're good because there's no expectations, and it's fun, and it's exciting.
Well said.
After that, even if you win the title, it's never as fun because you have the negative potential than it is that first year.
Well said. I think one of the beauties of world football is that it's a little bit different than that because there are different measurements of success for every club. In MLB, NBA, NFL, if you don't win the Super Bowl, your season's a bit of a failure. And there's some teams that they just make the playoffs, it's good. But in world football, there's all these different things you can do to be successful. You can avoid relegation. You can make European competition. You can sell players. You can get players into the national team. You can develop homegrown players.
I think I mentioned this to you last time. Estudiantes, I went to a talk they gave about their youth development, and they were so proud that they had the most players play in a World Cup from any club, and especially from Argentina.
Right.
They were like, the Argentine national team, this was 2014, is us. And they were proud of that. And they don't win most titles
right.
in Argentina, except for when Juan Sebastian Verón comes back like a god, raining down on people. Oh, what a great season. But yeah, so that goes into your...
If you, in MLS, for just about any club, if you make the playoffs and make the Open Cup final, that's a successful year. What I think makes it successful beyond that level for Philadelphia is... And look, this is the way I tend to look at sports as a neutral. Like, I want to see a process. I want to see, are you thinking about how you can win game to game, or are you thinking about how you can win long term and how you can develop good talents into good players? And I saw that this year with the Union. I saw, I mean, Keegan Rosenberry, who's gone now, and I don't understand that trade at all. Keegan Rosenberry bounced back.
He got traded to the Colorado Rapids.
Yeah,
did we not skip over that?
Yeah. What a bummer of a trade for Philly. Like he bounced back to what he looked like in 2016 and is now in national team camp. McKenzie and Trusty, they weren't perfect, but young players get better and they tended to get better, and they now you have that foundation to build on for next year. Just like Andre Blake wasn't great his first year in goal, but he became one of the best goalkeepers in MLS because of that experience. So I see that process as worthwhile. And now granted, as those young players are getting better, some of the old players are falling off a little bit and you need to chop and change, but that's true with any team. By having that core and them winning a little bit, that sets you up to win a little bit more next year and the year after. And I think that's a win. Like, you just don't have the budget that Atlanta United does. Go ahead.
The only problem with that in soccer is that they're at some point they sell them.
Yep.
It's not like you just use them. And so maybe you make money, which then gets you in a higher bracket with money. No, I get what you're saying.
So
it's a good point.
We talked about this with FC Dallas. That was the conversation. So we have an email here saying, I only got 47 minutes into your last podcast. Amazing.
That was about a third of it.
Yeah. When I had to turn it off out of frustration, to quote the great Herman Edwards, you play to win the game. Any and every fan that doesn't say the priority is winning championships is kidding themselves. The question is not whether you sell many players and play beautiful soccer versus winning championships, but how much you're willing to give up in playing beautiful soccer for that championship. I answer that with Stephanie Borden from FC Dallas, who said, I would call the 2019 season a success if we make the playoffs, gave kids minutes, and got some of them into the USMNT. Cervano and Pax were awesome in the USU-20s. We have a good team. Our defense is amazing. We have the parts to definitely contend. I'm really excited for the new season. M. Machado, as an FC Dallas fan, I like where the team's going, but I worry that going through a couple of years of the youth movement would kill our attendance. I just don't think our fan base as a whole is educated enough to be willing to suffer through
a couple
of...
It's already dead.
Well, he goes to mention that, but and then we got another message saying if FC Dallas isn't competing for trophies, it's unacceptable. Simply developing players isn't good enough. No one wants to be West Ham, which was one of the teams we brought up. So that's four different opinions, I think, across the board, on the same club, in the same conversation that we're talking about.
I do think that FC Dallas is betting a little differently, that if they do put 11 homegrown players out there, and obviously a competitive team, that that's their best path to selling out.
That's interesting. I mean, I don't know if that's true or right, but or true or not, but it would pique my interest as a neutral, and I think it would mean something to me as a fan. I do want to, you know, go back to the first sentiment, like you play to win the game. Obviously, you play to win the game, but like I'll use my experience as a UConn fan. Like UConn's been trash for the last 2 years. This year, I'm just hoping to see improvement.
Right.
I'm hoping that Jalen Adams, you know, keeps scoring 20 points a game and gets himself into the NBA. I'm hoping that we recruit well. If we win 25 games, get bounced out in the quarterfinals of the NIT, and put one guy into the NBA, that's a successful season for me, given the way things have gone. And I think Dallas fans have to kind of understand that. That's where their club is now. They had a four-year window to win titles. They won two of them. Maybe not the one they wanted, but they won two of them. And that window has closed, and now it's time to do something a little bit different.
I wouldn't be as definitive as that the window is closed.
I mean, if Pomacall and Cervania can ball out, then maybe it opens.
I mean, the point is we always can come back to Red Bulls 2018.
Yeah. You know,
they got rid of Sasha. They got rid of Dax. They have a mostly young team, but they have a goal scorer who's hot. They have a once-in-a-generation talent come through their academy, and all of a sudden, and a couple of good coaches, and anything's possible. So I think if you're any of these clubs, you think to yourself, if we have a good coach, if we run our club the right way, there's always a chance.
This is one of the areas where you and I, me and just about everybody, butt heads. I think the talent level between the homegrown players coming through the system and what we consider to be great soccer players at the MLS level, I think the talent differential is minuscule, is absolutely minuscule. And if you get the right coach and the right system and they instill the right belief, I think Tyler Adams is the wrong example because he's obviously a phenomenal player on a different level. But like Sean Davis, like you can make that type of player into an essential cog on literally the best regular season team in MLS history. And I think you could win like that. And I think that perhaps that's what Dallas is betting on. But if they don't win like that, If they have a bad year in terms of points per game, but the young players get better, I would still consider that to be a success in 2019.
So I do have to respond to that.
I do just because have to.
Because I've been every day with elite phenomenal prospects, guys who starred for Mexico's under-17s at World Cups, guys who played for the U.S., guys who played for Norway and Sweden's youth national teams, and they come through, and I'm telling you, like, no matter how good they are. Not you, not me, would put our careers on the line to put those guys in the field if you saw them every single day. So I don't want to argue about their talent level because I do ultimately agree with that. But we do have to acknowledge that if you were around them every single day in training, these young stars.
But then how does Ajax do it? It's culture.
So that's fair. But that is different than saying that these guys are just straight up good enough. You can create this overall system, but the idea that the 18-year-old USU-20 is as good as a 26-year-old who's never played an international game in their life – most of the time isn't true. And first thing we have to do is acknowledge that and then create this system and this culture or these rules to then level the playing field.
So I acknowledge that on one level, but on another level I would like to see it acknowledged that after a month of being bad, Reggie Cannon was more than good enough. And that if more of our young players are given a run of 6 or 8 games to start and to show what they have, more of them would win jobs. More of them would be starters in this league, as opposed to using retreads. There are a lot of retreads from home and abroad who are just starting game after game in MLS because of inertia.
Okay, let's move on. Michael Onderer here. If you were going to head down to one team's preseason training camp, which would you attend and why? Whether it's because of a new coach, star players, different atmospheres, what?
I mean, if Piojo is managing the Galaxy, then I'm going there because I want him to take a swing at me. I want to see.
I think Mourinho might too, by the way. I don't think you and Mourinho would.
I don't know if I could ruffle Jose's feathers. I don't think so.
Who are the ones playing in Hawaii?
I think Vancouver's in there.
Ask Kalen. Kalen definitely knows.
Yeah. Scott from Loonville, USA here. On today's episode, that was Monday, Matt and Dave discussed traveling and Merlot. I think we discussed Malbec.
Mm-hmm.
My wife isn't particularly into soccer, but works and is obsessed with wine. I think the World Cup in France, coming up in 2019, makes a great opportunity to meld our two interests. But you got me thinking about other places where we could wine taste and watch soccer. What would be your top places?
So I am obsessed with going to Lebanon, and there are a couple of wineries up in the mountains of Lebanon overlooking the Mediterranean Sea. Now, there's not great soccer in Lebanon, but... Any place where they have satellite TV and good wine and a nice view, that's the ideal place.
If you like honey wine, you could go to a World Cup qualifier in Ethiopia.
That's dope.
And catch a game there as well.
I would actually, I do like Sicilian reds. So how about Palermo?
Mm-hmm. That's pretty cool. Bobby, do you have anything to input into this?
I don't have a ton of input.
You don't have a ton of input?
What can you tell us about Central Pennsylvania wines?
Do you have any, soccer trips that are soccer and something else that you have you would love to go on, you planned, you have been on?
Ooh, that's a really good question. No. I would like to do it. Yeah. But also, when I go away, because we're so plugged into soccer all the time here, when I go away is my 5 days, mostly for whoever I'm going with, that I stay away from soccer.
Interesting. I want to do Istanbul in like one or two of those big games and just like gorge myself on like kebabs and just watch soccer.
That's
with
a good life.
Crazy fans, yeah.
At like a Fenerbahce or
exactly. Get a little bit of fish.
Yeah.
So that's a good
vacation.
Would
you wear a Tiba Hutchinson jersey to
Kyle Aaron jersey?
All right.
Yeah.
I don't think
I'd wear a Pepe jersey. soon to be LA Galaxy player, Pepe. But if anyone else has any good vacation ideas, I will take those. I won't share them on the mailbag because I don't want flights and hotels and stuff to go up. So I'll just take those for myself, and I can use them later on. We have one here. How will Casper and company fill their third DP spot? Black and red supporters have suggested the club fill it with a defender, be it a partner for Birnbaum or a fullback or a number eight to link Canales and Lucho. But controversial as it be, I'd love to see Areola converted to a full-time right back and bring in a DP right winger. He then goes on to list a million stats of reasons why their wingers didn't score any goals last year.
I mean, Yamil Assad had 9 goals.
Yeah, he had
all of them before he got hurt, but still. I think
He said after Assad returned from an injury mid-year, he was not that good.
They got to bring Assad back, and I believe they're working on that. And that, like, if you get him healthy with Rooney and Lucho, that's really good. If you add a DP winger on top of it, like a good DP winger, they'll score 70 goals. That'd be awesome. I am with the idea of turning Paul Areola into a right back. It's not far-fetched at all. He played it a little bit last year. But if you go back to his time in Liga MX with Cholos, he was a wing back in a 5-4-1 that was often a 5-3-2. He was one of those guys who covered end line to end line. He has good defensive instincts, obviously a nonstop motor. If he is willing to do it, and I think for the sake of his national team career, he should be, I think that would be a great use of a DP slot for DC United.
So much to unpack there. I actually think for the sake of his national team position, he should stay a winger because we've already been over the fact that there's no wingers in the pool.
I mean, Pulisic?
Pulisic and then...
Weah? Jonathan Amon?
For sure, but are we going to say Timothy Weah and Jonathan Amon aren't pretty much even with Areola right now?
Maybe what's our right back depth chart?
You wouldn't take Yedlin, Reggie, and Cannon over Areola quicker than you would take Jonathan Amon over Areola?
I think right now, but 2 years from now, maybe not.
I do think that Areola should move to right back, but I do think this is the tricky part, that he's probably higher on the depth chart at winger with the national team just because we're so weak at winger right now. But the other thing I want to point out is that O'Neill Fisher...
I can't believe you disrespected Corey Baird like that, by the way.
O'Neill Fisher for a few games...
Bobby's going to jump through a window after this.
...was phenomenal. I'm not about to say O'Neill Fisher will definitely make the All-Star team next year. but you know what? Like, he was really good. As soon as Rooney showed up and they went to this more flowing system with Areola tucking inside, O'Neill Fisher was phenomenal. And DC United is a hard decision to say, do we have a potential... I said All-Star, which is a stretch, but do we have a guy that can play near that level for O'Neill Fisher's price? But the other thing I want to point out is, where is there more marginal gain to be had from a DP player? Meaning, what would it take you to spend on a DP to feel like you are really getting a guaranteed upgrade over Areola at winger? Whereas, it feels to me like you could spend less on a DP outside back, but the point is they're going to use that max spend on someone. The question is, do they spend 3.5 to get a winger? I'm just thinking over the previous wingers that have been purchased, the Josue Coleman, the Kaku, how much it really takes to get over the threshold of knowing you're going to get an improved product over what you have now. The current product is Areola. Whereas I do think at outside back, even though I just said I really like the idea of O'Neill Fisher, I do think it's cheaper to get a right back in the world market into Major League Soccer, and all of a sudden maybe you're spending two, which saves your club $1.5 million, and you're more likely to get an elite right back for the lower price.
Can you win MLS Cup if your front four in a 4-2-3-1 is Rooney, Assad, Acosta, Areola?
That seems so obvious to me that the answer is yes. So okay. I'm curious why you asked. Do you not?
I don't know. I don't know.
One 2019 MLS Baranty.
Ooh. David Akam, newcomer or resurgent player of the year.
Comeback player of the year. God, Bobby.
Are you really guaranteeing that?
Yeah.
Oh, all right.
I'm going to say Joseph gets over 24 goals.
Okay, I like that. Toronto bounce back.
What does bounce back mean? Regular season 60 standings.
60 plus points.
Okay.
Okay. Hey, crackpot prediction next year. The one that you're like, actually, this might happen, but I'd rather not say it publicly.
Houston Dynamo CCL semifinals.
Oh, I like that.
Mm, that's a really good
Which
one.
Which I think they'd play Tigres in the quarterfinals if they got there.
Jackson Ewell, U.S. men's national team.
Hmm. David Akam, comeback player. <of the year.
laughs> And final two here. Apparently, we asked for intro help, and someone quoted you, Doyle, and said no one had more sauce than Clint frickin' Mathis. Did you say that on the show?
I did, yeah.
That I appreciate that. And the other person, literally, no name, no info, just wrote, I vote no on Bobby being in the intro. Boom. Not leaving a whole lot of space. Any 2018, what is the New Year's thing you do? Resolutions for 19.
Yeah.
Thanksgiving is when you look back on the
year.
Yeah,
Thanksgiving is when you talk about what you're thankful for.
So what am I supposed to ask you guys now?
This is solstice.
To close out the show.
I don't know.
The solstice. What's your solstice moment? I don't know. What are you guys going to close out on? What was 2018? Or what are you looking forward to?
We can all agree the best part of 2019 is when Doyle said that Shakhtar would make the playoffs.
That was 2018.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I've met some people at Cup who were like, I listen to your show every once in a while, and sometimes I agree and sometimes I disagree. Doyle's out of his mind on the Shakhtar thing.
What's your favorite moment? The 2018 ETR.
Favorite moment of the year? It was when David Akam won MVP.
That's in the future, Matt. That's in the future.
For myself, Andrew Wiebe, Bobby Warshaw, Matt Doyle. That's what happens when you host a show, Bobby. You don't have to answer tough questions. Thank you so much for listening. We've got Marisa Du, long interview that is incredible, coming up over the break. We're going to talk to Kenny Cooper about his wide career from Manchester United to having a professional soccer dad to coaching young players now in South Carolina. We talked to some cool members of U.S. soccer history and saving history. What else did we do that was cool? We talked to Alan Gordon for a little while. That guy's fun.
Yeah.
That guy's had a life. So you're going to learn a lot about Major League Soccer and just – I don't know, going through issues and overcoming them and enjoying what's around you. And then we'll be back. We'll be at the MLS Combine. So if you're in Orlando.
You're going to be down there the whole week, right?
I will be down there the whole week.
I'm only going for like 3 days.
Nice. That's classic, yeah. Doyle. It's no. Too tough to sit in a hotel.
I wanted to go down there for the whole week.
I don't want to get on a plane.
You know, like Abner is just such a suit. There is no
for
way.
For sure.
There is no way. He's got budgets.
He'll never hear this, so it doesn't matter. Yeah, we'll be there. We have, I don't know, Super Draft coming up. Preseason starts pretty soon after that. It'll be CCL mm-hmm. before you know it. And then March 2nd is Major League Soccer. So that's not that far away.
It's like, God.
So just put Matt Doyle's Twitter feed up starting December 24th, and he will give you a ton of content.
I will.
Throughout the week.
I will, for sure.
To keep you guys alive while we're away.
Well, and Liga MX starts in 2 weeks.
Yeah, there you go. Thanks so much for listening. Thank you to Continental for sponsoring us this whole year, for making some of the special things we've done around the country possible.
Mm-mm. From New York, New York, we out.